Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We have one job, and only one job. And that's to make sure the people of Florida get everything that they need to fully, thoroughly recover. We're one of the few nations in the world that, on a basis of a crisis we face, we're the only nation that comes out of it better than we went into it. And that's what we're going to do this time around, come out of it better.
President Biden and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis put politics aside, at least for one day, as the president tours more hurricane damage and promises full support for the victims. Meanwhile, there's a new claim from the woman who says Herschel Walker paid for her abortion. And it comes as Walker doubles down on his defense. And what a dramatic cut in oil production overseas could mean for the price we pay at the pump here at home. Good morning and welcome to Way Too Early on this Thursday, October 6th. I'm Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for starting your day with us. 1 week after Hurricane Ian made landfall in Florida, President Biden is warning that, quote, more is coming. The president visited the battered state yesterday, just days after surveying storm damage in Puerto Rico. In Florida, the president and Governor Ron DeSantis temporarily put politics aside as they met with residents in the Fort Myers area.
We were very fortunate to have good coordination with the White House and with FEMA. I think one of the things that you're seeing in this response, we are cutting through the bureaucracy. We are cutting through the red tape, and that's from local government, state government, all the way up to the president. So we appreciate the team effort.
I think he's done a good job. Before he called me when I heard the storm was on its way. We worked hand in glove. We have very different political philosophies, but we've worked hand in glove. I've been to a lot of disaster areas in the last couple months, last 6 months. There's a lot going on. And I think the one thing this has finally ended is a discussion about whether or not there's climate change and we should do something about it. Can't build back to what it was before. You got to build back better because we know more is coming.
We'll have more on the president's visit later in the show, but we've got a number of other significant headlines to get to this morning. A federal appeals court has handed the Justice Department a win in the ongoing fight over documents seized from former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has agreed to fast-track its consideration of the DOJ's legal challenge to the appointment of a special master. This comes after prosecutors had complained that the process is hampering their investigation. In a one-page order, the court set an aggressive timeline, ordering all parties to complete their legal briefings by November 17th. This marks a defeat for Trump, who had asked the court to wait until 2023 before hearing any arguments in the case. Ahead of the midterms next month, Congresswoman Liz Cheney is urging voters in Arizona to reject the state's Republican nominees for governor and secretary of state. Here's some of what she had to say during an event at Arizona State University last night.
In Arizona today, you have a candidate for governor in Carrie Lake. You have a candidate for secretary of state in Mark Fincham, both of whom have said, this isn't a surprise. It's not a secret. They both said that they will only honor the results of an election if they agree with it. If you care about democracy and you care about the survival of our republic, then you need to understand, we all have to understand that we cannot give people power who have told us that they will not honor elections. Elections are the foundation of our republic, and peaceful transfers of power are the foundation of our republic. And we must have elected officials in both parties who understand and honor that duty and that responsibility. So what happens here in Arizona is not just important for Arizona, but it's important for the nation and for the future functioning of our constitutional republic.
Cheney again, putting patriotism over party, crossing the lines to say she won't back Republicans. We now have the latest on the dramatic cuts in oil production announced by OPEC and its partners. The Alliance of Oil Exporting Countries saying it will slash its oil output by 2 million barrels a day. The action is expected to send gas prices higher after weeks of decline. NBC News correspondent Emily Akeda has the details.
After a year of tumultuous gas prices, signs to paint at the pump could worsen as some of the world's top oil producers, including Saudi Arabia and Russia, promised deep cuts to output. OPEC Plus announced it will slash production by 2 million barrels per day to spur a recovery in crude prices. The White House calling the decision short-sighted.
We are providing security, stability to the energy markets.
The move, defying an aggressive push from President Biden to keep fuel flowing, even visiting Saudi Arabia this summer to convince them to increase oil production. With midterms just weeks away, higher energy prices could be a blow to Democrats and undo months of steadily dropping costs at the pump in most areas of the country.
Talk to me about the timing of the cuts.
The barrels that are going to be cut will be cut in November. But what it means also is higher prices for drivers, higher prices for heating, higher prices for holiday travel.
In parts of California, gas prices are already topping $7 a gallon.
I got to go to where I'm going, so I got to pay it, but I'm not happy about it.
And across the country in Massachusetts, Scott McFarlane has been in the heating oil business for more than 50 years. He says customers should be prepared to pay more as temperatures there fall.
The timing is awful for us. It's going to be a tough winter for everybody, the consumers and the anybody in business.
Adding insult to injury for families already struggling with soaring inflation.
Joining us now, Washington correspondent for Bloomberg TV, Anne-Marie Horder. Anne-Marie, good morning. Let's start with that visit back in July when President Biden went to Saudi Arabia. I know you were on that trip covering it. He even had a controversial encounter with the Crown Prince, that fist bump in Jeddah. And certainly what he asked for in July is the exact opposite of what he got yesterday. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, the timing and optics of this OPEC cut of 2 million barrels a day on paper, Jonathan, could not be worse for the president. On the timing side, as you say, this comes on the heels of this landmark visit to Jeddah. And after that, the president had said he expected more oil to come on the market. When OPEC then met, they agreed to almost an embarrassingly low increase of 100,000 barrels. For some context, that what they are cutting right now is 20 times the amount of oil in terms of the actual volume of the in the other direction of what they gave Biden just after that meeting. And then also with the timing is, of course, the issue of the midterm elections. Poll after poll still shows that inflation, energy-driven inflation, is a huge story. Gasoline prices, this is top of mind of American consumers. And yes, we've come down from the national average peak in June that was at $5 a gallon. Prices are starting to tick up. They're just under $3.90 a gallon. And this is a major concern. The other big issue, of course, besides the timing, is the optics of all of this. This was a show of force in the sense that we haven't seen OPEC gather in person in years since the COVID-19 pandemic began. And on top of that, the Russian Deputy Prime Minister, who is the point person for OPEC, he is the face of Russian energy policy, was there in person. And Jonathan, that individual was newly sanctioned by the United States just on Friday. So a snub in a number of ways to the White House.
Yeah, certainly. As President Biden, we know, likes to frame things as a battle between democracies and autocracies. It's clear who won yesterday. But dig a little more on the role Russia plays in what happened yesterday and how it could help Moscow.
Well, it can easily help Moscow because what you're seeing is more supply coming off the market. And in the end, that would mean prices go higher. And what we see Russia doing in the market right now is that they're selling their crude still but they're getting deep discounts for that. But if prices are higher, that discount will obviously become much less. So this can help them. On top of that, you did have the Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak sit down with my colleague Manus Krani in his first international interview since Putin's invasions of Ukraine, an exclusive interview. And he said that this G7 oil price cap is actually going to be a blowback. And maybe that would mean that Russia won't be sending more of their product to the market, which would basically mean higher prices. But really, the influencer of this meeting, Jonathan, was Saudi Arabia. They are the driving force of this. Right now, they were producing at record highs. They are the ones that are going to bear the brunt of this cut. And they were the ones that really led in this decision.
Yeah, the timing here, extraordinary, comes just as Russia suffers a series of defeats in that war. And of course, we're now just 5 weeks from the midterms here in the United States. Bloomberg TV's Anne-Marie Hordern, thank you so much for starting us off this morning. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, North Korea ramps up tensions by firing at least two more missiles overnight. We'll have the very latest on the saber rattling going on overseas. Plus, more revelations concerning Georgia Senate nominee Herschel Walker and the allegation that he paid for a girlfriend's abortion. Those stories and a check on the weather when we come right back.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Way Too Early. The United States and its allies are ramping up their response to North Korea as tensions flare after several North Korean missile launches over the past 2 weeks. South Korea's military yesterday said their neighbors to the north fired an unspecified type of ballistic missile toward the Sea of Japan. The launch came 2 days after the north fired a missile that flew over Japan before crashing in the ocean. First time they did that in 5 years. The United States is responding by repositioning the USS Ronald Reagan Strike Group and performing a series of missile drills with South Korea. Another headline here, a mixed ruling from the conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is now leaving the fate of hundreds of thousands of immigrants in limbo. In a ruling yesterday, the court affirmed a lower court's ruling that an Obama-era policy protecting undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children violated federal law. But it sent a Biden administration effort to shore up the program back to a lower federal court, which means that allows the current program to remain in place. That decision means that more than 600,000 immigrants enrolled in the program can work and study in the U.S. without fear of being deported, but it bars any new applicants. President Obama signed an executive order called the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, better known as DACA, back in 2012. It halted deportations and granted work permits for certain immigrants who were brought to the country illegally as children, a group that became known as Dreamers. Former President Trump tried to undo DACA in 2017, but the Supreme Court ruled the president didn't follow the law in his efforts to end the program. In August, the Biden administration announced a new rule that protected Dreamers. That rule set to take effect at the end of this month. In a statement overnight, President Biden said he was disappointed with the appeals court ruling and called on Congress to take action. The credibility of the Secret Service is once again being called into question after agents reportedly miscommunicated key details of a car accident that involved Vice President Kamala Harris. There's new reporting in the Washington Post that says the new head of the Secret Service was, quote, disturbed to learn this week that a so-called mechanical failure involving the Veeps motorcade was actually caused by human error. On Monday morning, the motorcade was reportedly driving to the White House when the SUV carrying the vice president struck a curb. Vice President Harris was uninjured, but the impact was reportedly so severe that the SUV needed to change the tire and force the VP to be transferred to another vehicle. Shortly after the accident, agents sent out an electronic message informing department leadership of the, quote, mechanical failure. It wasn't until hours later that the Secret Service director was told of the true incident of the nature. Alec Baldwin and the producers of the movie Rust have settled a lawsuit with the family of the cinematographer who was fatally shot on set last year. The movie set is scheduled to be up and running again to complete the film with the blessing of the victim's husband. NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the details.
Nearly a year after the tragedy on the set of Rust, the family of Halyna Hutchins, the cinematographer fatally shot by Alec Baldwin, has reached an undisclosed settlement in its wrongful death lawsuit against the film's famed actor and producers. With production on the movie set to resume in January, Hutchins' husband Matthew will now become an executive producer to pay tribute to Halyna's final work.
The idea that the person holding the gun causing it to discharge is not responsible is absurd to me.
After speaking exclusively to Hoda Kotb earlier this year, Hutchins seems to have changed his position, saying in a statement, "I have no interest in engaging in recriminations or attributions of blame to the producers or Mr. Baldwin." Hutchins will now partner with the actor.
I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
Who told ABC News he was not responsible for Halyna's death.
Just so angry to see him talk about her death so publicly in such a detailed way, and then to not accept any responsibility.
As one civil case draws to a close, the Santa Fe district attorney could file criminal charges any day, with Baldwin, the film's armorer, and the assistant director all part of the investigation. The DA said if the facts and evidence warrant criminal charges under New Mexico law, then charges will be brought. No one is above the law.
And we have horrific breaking news to report out of Thailand. Authorities say that more than 30 people, primarily children, were killed today when a gunman opened fire in a child care center in the northeastern part of the country. A local police official says the attacker killed 30 people before taking his own life. A spokesperson for a regional public affairs office said two teachers and a police officer are also among the victims. Washington Post, citing Thai authorities, reports that the gunman was a 34-year-old former police officer who is dismissed from the force after being caught with drugs. We'll have more developments on this story as we learn them. Still ahead here, the latest on the war in Ukraine as Russia shifts to attacks that don't require boots on the ground. And amid all the destruction in the country, Ukraine has its eyes on the future, throwing its name into a major world event. That's ahead. We'll be right back.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Time now for sports, and we start with a truly wonderful moment out in Oakland for a retiring big leaguer.
Now batting, our dad, number 21, Steven Matz!
Steven Vogt's kids got to announce their dad's first at bat in his final game. Vogt, a two-time All-Star who has spent most of his 10-year career with the Oakland Athletics. He'd also bring the crowd to its feet another time during his final at bat.
This is probably the last time you'll ever hit.
It's a pretty crazy, crazy thought.
Vogt drives one. Right field. Did he do it? He did. Are you kidding me?
That is great. Look at the look of pure jubilation on his face. Home run in his final at bat. After the game, Vogt said his last game was everything he could have dreamed of. And interesting side note, his first big league hit was also a home run in the exact same section of right field. That is wonderful. And we got another highlight from that game in Oakland from one of the game's best players.
Mike Trout crushes one. He's staring that one down. Wow, number 40 for the three-time MVP, Mike Trout.
Mike Trout with a, quote, quiet 40 home run season. It's the third time he's done it. He's been upstaged a little bit by his teammate Shohei Ohtani, who any other year had an MVP season, but probably will finish second behind Aaron Judge. Mike Trout reminds us he's still pretty good. That blast, 490 feet, the longest of his career, and number 350 all-time for Trout. Yesterday was the final day of the Major League Baseball regular season, and the postseason starts tomorrow. A reminder, it's a new format now. There are three wild card teams in each league, giving the top two seeds in the AL and NL first-round byes. Astros, Yankees, Dodgers, Braves. The wild card round is a best of three series, a higher seed home for all three games. This is new. We got four baseball playoff games tomorrow, four more on Saturday. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Time now for the weather, and let's go to meteorologist Bill Cairns, who is back to give us the forecast today. Bill, how's it doing?
All right, John, we have to get your predictions, though. AL and NL, I'll set you up. I will go with Houston, unfortunately, and then I think I'm going to pull an upset. I think St. Louis or someone like that may sneak in the NL. I don't know. But we'll see how that plays out. What about you?
Yeah, the Cardinals have been playing great baseball down the stretch. I will also go Astros. I think they're pretty clearly the class of the American League. I mean, I hate to pick chalk, but I think it's the Dodgers. They're 109 wins or 110 wins. I think it's Dodgers-Astros, a rematch. 111, a rematch of the 2017 series, but this time L.A. gets it.
Yeah, no, that would be a good one, too. So, all right, let me get to this forecast, and thankfully, you're going to hear the lawnmowers going today in areas of the east. That pesky storm that was with us for, like, the last 6 days, the remnants of Ian that turned into a nor'easter, will be leaving, and the sunshine returns finally. I mean, it's going to be glorious, mid-70s, so it's actually going to be like shorts weather again all of a sudden after pulling out the gloves and the winter coats practically in the mid-Atlantic and southern New England. So enjoy this. Temps rebound nicely, but then a big blast of cold air is coming down through the Great Lakes. This tomorrow will be chilly in Chicago and Cleveland. Of course, we got the Chicago Marathon this weekend on Sunday. Going to be chilly for that also. And then for this weekend, notice areas like New York after a cool Saturday and Sunday. You know, it's going to be cold during the morning, Jonathan, but at least the sun is going to be out. No rain in sight.
Looks like a pretty crisp, perfect autumnal weekend to me. Bill Cairns, thank you so much. Still ahead here on Way Too Early. The Daily Beast is offering new blockbuster details after Georgia Senate nominee Herschel Walker denied a report that he paid for a girlfriend's abortion. We'll tell you the latest. Plus, we'll also have news on the fighting in Ukraine as Russia launches new drone strikes near Kyiv. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Way Too Early. It's just after 5:30 a.m. on the East Coast, 2:30 out West. I'm Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for being with us. Georgia Republican Senate candidate Herschel Walker is dealing with another new bombshell report this morning. The woman who told the Daily Beast earlier this week that Walker paid for her to have an abortion back in 2009 now says she also had a child with him. The new claim appears to undercut Walker's defense that he didn't know the woman who had claimed to be an ex-girlfriend.
The Daily Beast article states this. When the woman first told the Daily Beast her story, we agreed not to reveal certain details about her identity over her concerns for safety and privacy. But then Walker categorically denied the story and said he didn't know who was making this allegation. The report goes on to state this. The woman, a registered Democrat whose years-long relationship with Walker continued after the abortion, told the Daily Beast that her chief concern with revealing her name was because she is the mother of one of Walker's own children, and she wanted to protect her family's privacy as best she could while also coming forward with the truth. Walker has publicly acknowledged that child as his own, and the woman proved she is the child's mother and provided credible evidence of a long-term relationship with Walker. Walker responded to the new report last night, providing NBC News with this statement, quote, "As I've already said, there's no truth to this or any other Daily Beast report." Walker had already denied the allegation that he paid for an abortion, calling it a flat-out lie. He's threatened a lawsuit against the Daily Beast, but has yet to file one. It's important to note, NBC News has not confirmed the Daily Beast's reporting. Joining us now is a politics reporter for the Daily Beast, Ursula Parano. Ursula, good morning. Thanks for being here. First to this new bombshell report regarding the woman who claims Herschel Walker paid for her abortion and that she also had his child. What's the very latest and what are the shockwaves it's sending through this race?
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to have a profound impact on this race. Herschel Walker has campaigned as an absolutist on not allowing abortion. And so this definitely gets at the crux of whether he is being hypocritical in this case. I can say the Daily Beast definitely stands by its reporting. My colleague Roger has vetted this claim in and out. And Herschel Walker coming forward and continuing to deny it, especially after originally saying he couldn't fathom to think who this woman was, you know, it continues to cast doubt. At this point, we know it is one in four women. He has had children with four different women. And so, you know, it's getting harder and harder for him to dodge this question. But I'll be curious how much Democrats really choose to lean in on this in the following weeks, in these final weeks of the midterms, actually, either in advertising or in the upcoming debates, whether they really choose to trump at this issue or whether they try to stick to more of the bread and butter stuff.
Yeah, certainly after the first Daily Beast article, Republicans rushed to Walker's defense. It'll be interesting to see what happens today in light of last night's new developments. I also want to talk about your latest piece about another key Senate race. This one focused on Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. You write that he's, quote, target rich for Democrats, but yet he's still up in the polls. Explain to us this dynamic. Tell us more about this race.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're seeing here is that Ron Johnson, despite being Republicans' most vulnerable incumbent senator, is inching ahead in the polls against Democrat Mandela Barnes. And when I spoke to folks about why that's happening, I really heard that it's that Democrats and Barnes, given all of the things that they want to touch on with Johnson, his, you know, very conspiratorial COVID theories that he has spread, his controversial remarks on January 6th, and then some of his more typical Republican chops on Medicare and Social Security and taxes, that between all of those things, they haven't really found one central sort of rallying message. And that's in contrast to Johnson himself, who has sort of chosen crime as his go-to talking point this cycle. He has been hammering that issue, focusing on Barnes's support for ending cash bail, among another of other criminal justice proposals. And in leaning into that, he does seem to be able to move the needle, particularly with his base and independent voters, which we've seen in a number of other Senate races this cycle where crime is being utilized as an issue for Republicans.
Yeah, I know some national Democrats fear that Barnes and John Fetterman of Pennsylvania both may be a little left of where the electorate is in those states. Difference, though, Fetterman up in the polls right now, Barnes down. At least for the moment. The Daily Beast's Ursula Parano, thank you so much for your reporting this morning. We will talk to you again soon. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, we're going to go live to CNBC for an early look at Wall Street. The market's still in the red this morning, following an end to a short-lived rally. We'll get some insight on what could be driving the trading day next on Way Too Early. Time now for business. The White House is criticizing a decision from a major international energy alliance to cut oil production by more than 2 million barrels a day. In a statement yesterday, the Biden administration accused the OPEC Plus group of making a, quote, short-sighted move that would have the most negative impact on lower and middle-income countries. Earlier in the day, OPEC announced the largest cut in oil production since the start of the pandemic, citing, quote, uncertainty that surrounds the global economic and oil market outlooks. Economists predict the move will once again drive the price of oil above $100 per barrel at a time when U.S. gas prices are already rising. Let's turn to the markets now. And for that, let's bring in CNBC's Arabile Gumede, who joins us live from London. Arabile, let's start there with the aftermath of this OPEC Plus decision, sharply criticized by the Biden administration, particularly coming so close to the midterms. Should we expect oil prices to go up? How much and when?
Yeah, certainly is the case. I mean, that's the case they're trying to make, right? OPEC saying that they want to cut these 2 million barrels per day to try and get the price back up to, past $100 a barrel. Of course, not so long ago, it was sitting at $120 a barrel, right? Now sitting in between that around $87 and $93 a barrel mark, depending on if you have Brent crude oil or if you have WTI, of course, within your contract. So that really is the case in point here. But of course, as you noted, Joe Biden, the president of the United States, trying to get the likes of Saudi Arabia and other nations then within the OPEC Plus region to actually pump more oil into the market in order to stabilize things, to create less of an energy pressure where prices, of course, in the energy sector have certainly skyrocketed across the world. You are likely to see a bit of a bump up in that oil price right now. But whether it continues to go a whole lot higher and whether the pressure does eventually toll on OPEC Plus, is still something we're yet to see.
Certainly the domestic concerns, though, prices up across the board due to inflation, polls suggest it's gas prices that voters care most about. Arabile, Wall Street failed to hold on to sharp gains from the last two sessions. How's the market shaping up this morning?
Yeah, perhaps rallied a little too high, right? Ran a little too rugged. But certainly a few question marks still around a recession globally. Those questions still filtering through within the market. So those question marks are forcing the market to perhaps hold back ever so slightly. Of course, we are expecting interest rates to continue to rise across the globe. So those global growth fears have still become the main issue at hand here. And actually, believe it or not, even still, those oil production issues are still filtering through into the market, because worries are if that goes up, of course, it impacts things like inflation, which has remained high in most economies across the globe. If that continues to be the case, interest rates go higher. And of course, the cost of living continues to go up as well.
CNBC's Arabile Gumede joining us live from London this morning. Thank you, as always. Still ahead, Vladimir Putin signs an annexation that no one in the West will recognize. We'll get more on that, plus the latest on the gains by Ukrainian forces, when national security analyst for NBC News Clint Watts joins me after this quick break. Welcome back. In an overnight attack, Russian forces used at least a half a dozen Iranian-supplied drones to strike a military base about 50 miles south of Kyiv. In the last 3 weeks, Ukraine has reported a spate of Russian strikes with drones, but this assault is by far the closest to the country's capital in months. The attack highlights the growing risks that Ukraine faces as its forces advance in the south and the east. It also comes as Russian troops appear to be ramping up their use of Iranian-made drones on the battlefield. Iran denies supplying the drones to Russia, while the Kremlin has not commented. Russian President Vladimir Putin yesterday signed the final papers to annex four regions of Ukraine. This comes as Moscow's military struggles to control those very occupied areas. In response, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky announced Ukraine's fast-track application to join NATO earlier this week. Zelensky also ruled out negotiations with Russia, saying Putin's actions make talking to the Russian leader impossible. Joining us now, former FBI special agent and national security analyst for NBC News and MSNBC, our friend Clint Watts. Clint, good morning. Thanks for being here. Putin seems to have sharply escalated the contours of this war by signing that annexation after the sham referendums. He's also said that he's ready to use his atomic arsenal to defend Russia, though U.S. officials say they've seen no signs of any movement in that direction. But give us your assessment right now, the state of play. How seriously should we be taking Putin's threats?
Well, it's interesting, Jonathan. While he's declared this annexation, it probably is a bit too late because he's losing ground in both the east and the south of Ukraine at a steady clip. What's interesting, I think, is the Russian military in many of these locations, particularly just to the east of Lyman, that area that you have highlighted there, they're not even holding towns. They, for the most part, actually pulled back from those towns and moved into that Luhansk province. And that's pretty remarkable. Those were hard-fought gains for the Russians over the first 6 months of war. They're giving it up in just a matter of days. Separately, in the south, you're seeing the Ukrainians advance, but also taking heavy losses of their own. The Russians are now ferrying soldiers over the Dnipro River that have been wounded on the battlefield against Ukraine. But it is just a fascinating turn of events because it begs the question, what is Putin's long run plan? And that's where that question of nuclear devices comes in. Would Vladimir Putin use a tactical or low yield nuclear device? There's been threats by that, one of his colonels as well. Would they actually go to that length? And would it even matter? When you had asked about the drones before, I think it's also a sign in some ways of desperation. Putin's forces using drones, not in a strategic manner, but instead just to incite fear in Kyiv. It doesn't relate to any sort of battlefield success. It probably is not even hitting the military target of significance, so just more of a shock effect. How long can the Russians keep that going whenever they're losing ground? And how would they keep morale up when they're just ferrying troops to the front and dropping them out in front of the Ukrainian forces? A very tumultuous time for the Russian military.
Yeah, those troops almost feel like cannon fodder. Clint, I want to get your reaction to the big New York Times story from yesterday in which they say that U.S. intelligence agencies believe it was parts of the Ukrainian government that carried out a car bomb in Moscow back in August that killed the daughter of a prominent Russian nationalist. When that first happened, there was some speculation that maybe the Russians had done it themselves as a false flag and try to escalate the war. Now it seems like Ukraine was behind it. What's your take as to why and why the U.S. is putting this out now?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting for both of those reasons, Jonathan. Why would the Ukrainians do it? That is an agitator inside Russia, Dugin and Dugina, which is his daughter. That car bombing likely tried to target the father, Dugin, who's much more well-known and is one of the rallying, those that leads the rally cry to fight in Ukraine. It really acts as an antagonism that actually draws more support to the war. It's also just not a very effective operation militarily. And it just is interesting that the U.S. seems to have not been aware of it and also not in agreement with that sort of approach. So very confusing why they would choose to do it. And I think separately does speak to the capability of the Ukrainians to some degree that they've been able to do two things. One, conduct operations at different types and different locations, which is more than I think I expected. And separately, they're able to keep information and operational control from the United States and it seems like from Russia, which is pretty remarkable. It seems as if the U.S. knows a lot more about what Russia is doing than what Ukraine is doing, even though they're working with the Ukrainians.
Yeah, it does seem perhaps certainly a source of tension in an otherwise pretty tight-knit alliance. Clint Watts, thank you so much for joining us this morning. One other note from Ukraine. They announced yesterday they're joining Spain and Portugal's bid to host the 2030 World Cup, another sign that they're not going anywhere, another effort to try to bring back a sense of normalcy to their nation. Up next here on Way Too Early, more on President Biden's visit to Florida and his meeting with Governor Ron DeSantis, the possible political rival. And coming up on Morning Joe, a live report from Fort Myers, where residents continue to take stock of the damage left by Hurricane Ian. Plus, Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney will be a guest. President Biden is making a stop in his district today to tout investments coming directly from the recently passed CHIPS law. Morning Joe, just a few minutes away.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.